Common Sense with Leland Conway on 630 KHOW, Denver's talk station.
Light the fuse and run now, brother, because you ain't got a lot of time. Don't you act surprised when it all goes to hell on your dime. Bells will ring.
The bell has rung, and for whom the bell tolls. It is Leland Conway, who is out today. You heard a Best Of episode yesterday. I thought a very fascinating hour-long conversation with Representative Thomas Massie, Republican of Kentucky, and reprising an earlier interview that Leland had done with Miranda Devine of the New York Post. If you missed any portion of that, you can find it in the podcast. You can find it on his blog page. Both of those interviews set aside as individual podcast items themselves. Super Shoe, Ryan Schuling filling in. B-Large on the board, Brian Avila. B-Large, I haven't caught up with you since your trip to Vegas, and I wanted to kind of hear and feel out where that went for you, because you and I had discussed whether or not you were going to go, how long you're going to stay, if you're going to gamble bigly, and I just want to know how that turned out for you, if it turned out well at all.
I lost money, of course.
Yeah,
but that's inevitable when you go to Vegas. It's just, you know, you give them your money for your stay there.
Yeah.
No, man, it was really good. You know, saw some new acts out there. You know, definitely going to be getting them here on the airwaves probably very soon, at least a few of them. So, yeah, good time, though, seeing a lot of people from across the country, within the company, out of the company as well, and just doing a lot of networking.
Give the people of this program a flavor for what it is you do behind the scenes here on the FM side.
So I am the assistant program director. So basically I'm like the second person in charge of the radio station, help out with the music that gets played, a lot of the scheduling, a lot of the air talent scheduling as far as us being out of town or we need coverage, stuff like that. But mostly, yeah, just being a right hand to the person in charge.
Call letters, number on the dial website for that station?
KTCL. Is what we are, Channel 93.3 on your dial.
Channel 93.3. Do you ever come up with a creative ways like how to deliver that? Like, what's your tagline? How do you kind of, you know, ramp out the post or whatnot?
Just Channel 93.3.
There you go. Okay. Well, he's been around the building in many different ways, and we appreciate B-Large and his many talents in affording them to us for 2 hours a day here on Uncommon Sense with Leland Conway. One more question for you, B-Large, before I let you float off into the ether. Your experience academically coming up, let's say there's a young person out there or there's a parent of a young person who wants to go into radio to do the job that it is that you do, to be able to go to a great conference and convention like you went to Las Vegas. They're really into modern music. They want to make a career of that. How did that happen for you?
It just kind of happened, to be quite honest, man. I was in high school and I was just in a class and reading some poetry one day, and my teacher said, "Hey, you have a nice voice. You ever thought about like trying to do, you know, some kind of radio or anything like that?" And I never really took it seriously. I took a year off after high school, and then after that, my friends were looking for a roommate up in Greeley because one of their buddies had fallen out of being able to go to college up there. He had a little incident back home that his parents wouldn't allow him to go up to school, so they needed an extra roommate. I then became their roommate, studied up at UNC, Ames Community College as well, and just, did everything through there, got out, started here, and, I've been here ever since 2006, the summer of 06.
Now, the reason I asked that, so you were in your college experience, that would have been early 2000s?
Yes.
Right. What was that atmosphere, that environment like on campus, in class, just among the student body, the student populace? There's a point to this question, but I just want to get a sense for what you experienced as a college student at that time about 20 years ago.
I mean, just, you know, I mean, I had a lot of friends that I went to the same school with and everything like that, that they were already up there. So, I mean, a lot of just mixing into the people that they knew. As I said, you know, I took a year off, so they were freshmen starting there. I was a sophomore starting there.
Sure.
So, yeah, they had just established a lot of friendships, everything like that. Didn't have to live in the dorms after the fact. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we were able to get in a house with a few of us and just, you know, had a great time, man. A lot of creation, a lot of everything like that, kind of what we do here, you know. It's a lot of teamwork, a lot of everything like that, And that was exactly just what it was, you know. It takes a village to get people through places, especially when you're in college and you have the freedom to do whatever you want, you know, so.
And that's what I experienced. Now, I'm a little bit older than you, not a lot. I mean, I went to college in the mid-90s, and that experience for me, B-Large, was fascinating because I got exposed to a lot of different people from different backgrounds, different life experiences. They brought different strengths and abilities to the table. I learned a lot from my fellow students and people that would become my friends, people I would hang out with. And I look back on it as a universally positive, enriching experience where you learn just as much out of the classroom as you do in. And I don't look back at really any moments where there was tension or clashing with people from other ethnic backgrounds or religious backgrounds or viewpoints politically. Did you encounter that at all in your college experience?
I hung out with a lot of wrestlers and baseball players.
Yeah.
So, you know, they always had conflicts with one another as far as things going on.
But typical stuff.
Yeah, yeah, no, man, like I said, like everybody was, you know, very welcoming. We're, you know, very just able to speak your mind, you know, talk about your ideas, everything like that.
Yeah.
You know, it was more of a just a uplifting as opposed to a tearing down, which you should always be doing. You know, you got to always try and uplift each other to do great things. And that was what it was, man. You know, everybody was just there to try and get their education, you know, still have fun at the same time. But for the most part, you know, just try and pull each other through the mud and get out.
Be large. Thank you, because you have provided the perfect segue for me to transition to a WTF moment for you and for me. I mean, you're a millennial, I'm a Gen Xer, but we had similar experiences. And to me, they weren't that long ago. Now, I know chronologically, we're talking 20 years for you, 25 to 30 years for me in college. And granted, that's a long time. A lot can happen. A lot can change. But what I have witnessed over the weekend, and I apologize for my weakened voice. I am recovering from COVID. I am fine. I was on a 5-day cycle of Paxlovid after the fact. And let me tell you, I know that drug's by Pfizer, and a lot of you don't trust Pfizer, and for good reason, and maybe with the vaccines and the boosters. But that drug, whether it was for my father or myself, turned me right around. I mean, when you have COVID, if you had it in the audience, you can relate. And if you haven't, God bless you. I hope you never get it. This is, for me, the first time in 3 years that COVID's been around that I can confirm that I got it, that I had it, and that I was sick from it. And what it did to me was it kind of put a grip on me, is the best way I can describe it. Now, the initial symptoms, you're thinking cold, and then it gets a little bit serious and stronger, you're thinking maybe flu, and then I got the chills, and I can't sleep, and you know, I'm having a real hard time. And at that point, I'm like, yeah, I better take a test. Now, this whole time, as soon as I felt bad, this was later on Monday. So I came to work last Monday, and I'm feeling bad, and I go home, and I text Dave Tepper, our boss, like, I don't think I should come in. I always err on the side of caution. I'm not one of these punky nerd kids that is obsessed with getting perfect attendance. You know the type. And they would come to school sick, and they'd get everybody else sick. Well, I want my perfect attendance. The last thing I want to do is make anybody else sick. If I have to be miserable, that's one thing. I got sick. I assume the risk of life. I went to the Bruce Springsteen concert. That's probably where I got COVID. I don't know for sure, but it's probably where I was infected with it. But it's part of living, right? I'm not going to just shut down and be a shut in and wear a mask everywhere and not do anything. I got my life to live. And when it's over, that's it. It's done. I'll be in the ground or in an urn, one or the other. And I wanted to worry about anything at that point. So I'm going to live. I'm going to live my life. And that's what I chose to do. And I, by virtue of that choice, one of the risks at this point in 2023 is you can get COVID. And I got COVID. So I got prescribed Paxlovid, which is a series of pills after the fact. You take two of one antiviral, one of another. One of them is actually an HIV inhibitor as well. But in combination, they lay waste to the COVID, the virus, the symptoms, the aftermath, all of it. In fact, I had lost my sense of taste, I want to say day 3 or 4 in, somewhere around there. And that was when it got really bad last week. And I'm already getting it back. So again, if you get infected with COVID, yeah, you deal with it. You deal with it. I would recommend Paxlovid. My insurance covered it. Hopefully yours will as well, or at least a strong portion of it. But that's my deal. So again, that's my side apology and kind of a side in Shakespearean terms for why I sound the way that I do. Now back to the topic at hand. I remember my college experience and I remember it fondly. We were just talking about it with B Large, and it was in the 90s, and that was a much different time. And I know that, but I was also a graduate student in the 2000s when B. Large went to school and the millennials were coming through. And it was much the same experience. I was on a staff in the Broadcast and Cinematic Arts Department at Central Michigan University in Mount Pleasant, where I knew that the majority of the faculty were liberal. They were very liberal. And they knew that I was not. That I was, at that point, I would call myself center-right. I'm definitely further to the right now, but it's like I stood still on the fence post, right? And the Overton window that Michael Brown talks about in the mornings here, that has gone so far to the left. I don't think I've changed that much. I may have become more firm in certain beliefs, but I was always open to a conversation and to having my mind changed. And not trying necessarily to change the minds of others, but just telling them what my thoughts were and how I felt. And I had that experience. I had that environment at CMU in the mid-2000s, was as recently as I was there. I left in 2005. I know that's almost 20 years ago now, but so much has changed and devolved on public college campuses in this country. And I would even say private schools as well, that have gone down this primrose path of the woke, of diversity and inclusion. And it's not that these things are bad, don't get me wrong, but you don't want to force that narrative on a person's lens just for the sake of doing that, meaning that all of these people that have been historically marginalized are now victims. And South Park did a wonderful episode with this as the B-line story. You might have heard about the A-line story, which was mocking Prince Harry and Princess Meghan. And everybody laughed at that. And it was spot on. It was cutting. And it was terrific. But the B-line story in that was Butters trying to help Kyle develop a new persona. And every one of the choices at this kind of center that they went to had the final of 4 points being you're a victim. And victimhood now, it's not just a badge of honor. It's not just something where you get attention, you get sympathy, but you get power. You are empowered by your victimhood. And you can wield that like a cudgel over everyone else around you. And in these padded cells that are now college campuses, where they are inculcated with like-minded groupthink in echo chambers. They are never challenged on their beliefs. If they are, the person challenging them can be labeled and branded and dismissed as a racist, as a homophobe, as a sexist, as a misogynist, as a transphobe. You just slap a label on somebody and send them packing out the door. And that's anyone. Any belief that deviates from the orthodoxy of the hard neo-fascist left, and that is what they are, make no mistake. These are neo-fascists, because by the very virtue of the definition of fascist, there is one set of beliefs, you are not to deviate from that, and if you are, and if you do, you are ostracized, you are excommunicated. You are unpersoned because of your beliefs. I imagine right now going on a college campus as a young person. I can't even fathom it as a Gen Z now generation conservative trying to make my way on a public college campus and for fear of being ostracized and called out and eliminated and canceled and disqualified for even expressing a view that is different from whatever the hard left has established is the thing for that given day. And now those rabid, childish, infantile beliefs, and why they are that is because they don't want their feelings hurt. And they need a safe space where everything is okay and they'll never be challenged. And they don't ever have to face anything difficult in life, because isn't that hard? Isn't that difficult? You should be rewarded for your victimhood status. You should be reinforced for whatever it is you think that is in line with what everybody else thinks on that campus. This is like a snowball rolling downhill. And now they have staff members assigned to the administration of these universities that reinforce this bullying of views. The DEI deans, they're called deans. They're hired on the basis of their virtue signaling and how many boxes they check. Just go down the woke list of boxes. Are you gay or trans? There's a check. Are you a person of color? There's a check. Are you a female? There's a check. And the more boxes of those that you check, the more right you are and the less wrong you can be with anything. So by the less very definition right now, if you're Karine Jean-Pierre, you're above reproach. You cannot be criticized, because if you are, the person doing it is inherently part of a systemically racist country. They are homophobic because she is gay. They are racist because she is black. They are misogynist and sexist because she's a woman. And she's invulnerable. She's invincible. She cannot be attacked. And I'm talking about on the premise of her qualifications and of her ideas and how she speaks. And it should be a fair game. This should be a gauntlet where you enter into politics, and guess what? It's a street fight. It's a bare knuckles boxing match. And if you enter the arena, you accept that going in, but it doesn't apply if you're a magical part of this woke leftist ideology. You don't have to play by the same set of rules. You can dismiss and cancel anyone who disagrees with you on the basis of these isms. Racism, homophobic perceptions, all of these. Xenophobia, all these phobias and isms. So when we come back, and I'm not going to have enough time to get into it here, I'm only got about a minute and a half left, I want to get into Tyrion Steinbach. I'll introduce you to the characters here. She is, at least at this current moment, still the dean of DEI at Stanford Law, associate dean. And then the case of Fifth Circuit Judge Kyle Duncan. And he was invited by the Federalist Society, conservative organization on campus, students who wanted him to come speak on things like COVID and the law. And apparently this was ground not to be tread upon, because by his very nature, by his very existence, Judge Duncan was not acceptable on that campus because his mere presence caused harm based on the decisions that he made in his court. And you will not believe your ears when you hear what Tyrion Steinbach has to say. And she has an entire soliloquy ready, written down to go and interrupt this speaker, Judge Duncan. And again, this happened at Stanford Law. Ryan Schuling filling in. We'll have some of that sound for you when we come back. Filling in for Leland Conway, this is Uncommon Sense on 630 KHOW.
And now, back to more Uncommon Sense with Leland Conway on 630 KHOW, Denver's talk station.
Oh, yeah. Remember, you can text the program 57739. Start at Leland. Ryan Schuling in for Leland Conway. Be large alongside. We heard from him in our number one, segment number one. Here in segment two, to set the table just a little bit, the Federalist Society on campus, and this would be at Stanford Law, invited Judge Kyle Duncan to give a speech. And throughout this speech, he was rudely interrupted because it was ambushed. It was taken over, basically, by far-left, fringe, lunatic students at Stanford Law. Now, I say that, but I believe they are part of the core of a lot of these students now that are, again, they're just part of this snowball rolling downhill of hard-left ideology that's not to be questioned. And Judge Duncan could not get a word out edgewise. They had signs. They were chanting at him. They were snapping their fingers when they would agree with something that somebody else would say. It's like this cultish children of the corn behavior. You know, sometimes I guess you would do that at a jam poetry session or some kind of alt rock guitar performance with acoustic, and you liked it. You're trying to be a beatnik and revive Allen Ginsberg in the 1950s and Bob Dylan and so forth. So you're going to hear some finger snapping that's really creepy and weird, but that's what it is. And then all of a sudden, up steps the hero, Associate Dean of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion, Tyrion Steinbach. And she just so happens to have a list of prepared, typed out remarks ready to go as she interrupts Judge Duncan and tries to tell him a thing or two about what it means to come into their safe space.
I am an associate dean, and I would love to answer your question. Can I? Yeah, and to this room, because you're asking into the room as well. Is that okay?
Associate dean, what do you
So you've invited me to speak here, and I'm being heckled nonstop. Yeah. And I'm just asking for an administrator to sign
up. That's an administrator!
Your racism is showing.
I would like to
know.
If you want a marketplace of ideas, you have gotten what you wanted, take it. Like, do you want an echo chamber? What's the issue?
Can I
Woo! As this student accuses him, the judge, of wanting an echo chamber. So ironic, because his comment, this student, going unchallenged from his own echo chamber. Tyrion Steinbach finally speaks, because again, she needs to step up for these poor students. They can't handle it themselves.
I guess I have prepared remarks, but they're not letting
me get prepared.
Go.
Yes,
please.
And I have to write something down, because I'm so uncomfortable up here. And I don't say that for sympathy. I just say I'm deeply, deeply uncomfortable. I'm uncomfortable because this event is tearing at the fabric of this community that I care about and I'm here to support. And I don't know, and I have to ask myself, and I'm not a cynic to ask this, is the juice worth the squeeze? Is this worth it? It is an aesthetic. But for many people in this law school who work here, who study here, and who live here, you're advocacy, your opinions from the bench, land as absolute disenfranchisement of their rights, and does land. Let me get to you.
This hostile bunch of jackals just waiting to pounce on Judge Duncan. Anything that he says, he dare not interrupt. The enlightened Tyrion Steinbach, who is the associate dean of DEI at Stanford Law. I'd like to know her legal background. I don't know that. But she gives us the guise of, she was so uncomfortable. This whole setting made her so uncomfortable, she had to write down these prepared remarks to share them with. And that his rulings did harm, and she expands on that.
And it impacts directly their people, humans, their families, and their communities. And I'm uncomfortable, and it's uncomfortable to say this to you as a person.
Why?
It's uncomfortable to say that for many people here, your work has caused harm, has caused harm. And I know that must be uncomfortable to hear. I know that must be. Let me please finish. And I want to give you space to finish your remarks too, Judge Duncan.
No, she doesn't.
I'm also uncomfortable because many of the people in the room here I've come to care for. In my role at this university, my job is to create a space of belonging for all people in this institution. And that is hard and messy and not easy, and the answers are not black or white or right or wrong. This is actually part of the creation of belonging. And it doesn't feel comfortable, and it doesn't always feel safe, but there are always places of safety, and there is always an intention from this administration to make sure you all can be in a place where you feel fully you can be here, learn, grow into the amazing advocates and lawyers and leaders that you're going to be.
One, maybe that role shouldn't exist then, because if that's her job as she describes it, that's superfluous. Why is it that we need to create a safe space on a campus for any student. Now, safe in the sense that they're not going to be harmed physically. They're not going to be attacked for who they are. We have laws on the books already to enforce those things, and they should be there. No one should go on a college campus because of who they are, no matter what that is, and feel unsafe. But that's a slippery word, because by unsafe, the left means their feelings get hurt. Where is it written in the American Constitution or anywhere else that you have a right not to have your feelings hurt? This is the real world. And as we send these young people age 18 to 22 into the real world to face real world problems, you need to be tough. We need to toughen these kids up, not soften them, not coddle them. Bad things are going to happen. Bad people are going to do bad things to you. Bad people are going to say things you don't like, and good people are going to say things you don't agree with. You have to learn to compose yourself and handle it. Lord knows, as conservatives, do we have safe spaces on campuses? No. It is open season to attack any young conservative kid on campus because it's justified. Because there's a greater good to which the left describes that they have the moral high ground. And therefore they can dictate and condescend to a conservative student who just isn't woke enough yet until they break that student. Until they break them down psychologically and get them to submit. That's the end game here.
I'm also uncomfortable because it is my job to say you are invited into this space. You are absolutely welcome in this space.
Is he?
In this space that people learn and again live. I really do wholeheartedly welcome you because me and many people in this administration do absolutely believe in free speech. We believe that it is necessary. We believe that the way to address speech that feels abhorrent, that feels harmful, that literally denies the humanity of people, that one way to do that is with more speech and not less, and not to shut you down or censor you or censor the student group that invited you here. That is hard, that is uncomfortable, and that is a policy and a principle that I think is worthy of defending even in this time, even in this time.
See, it used to be that, you know, some really far out there, Proud Boys, KKK, these sort of wackadoodle far right groups would be invited on college campuses, including my own, where I'd be like, whoa, there's like a, you know, white supremacy speaker. Well, that's odd. And this is back in the 90s. But what did I do? I go, well, I don't want to go to that. Now, you could protest it. You have every right to protest it on the outside. You don't have a right to disrupt it. And that's part of the college code across most campuses, even still, as they want to silence the speech. And hear what she said about this judge. This is a judge appointed to a circuit court. But his speech, according to Tyrion Steinbeck, the associate dean of diversity, equity, and inclusion, his speech is abhorrent, harmful, and demeans the humanity of students. That's her starting point. But he should still have a right to say whatever it is he came here to say. But is the juice worth the squeeze? She made that the foundational kind of point of her entire speech. And she thought it was really profound. And we'll get into that a little bit more right here.
And again, I still ask, is the juice worth the squeeze?
What does that mean?
I mean, is it worth the pain that this causes and the division that this causes? You have something so incredible, important to say about Twitter and guns and COVID that is worth this impact on the division of these people who have sat next to each other for years, who are going through what is the battle of law school together so that they can go out into the world and be advocates. And this is the division this caused. When I say, is the juice worth the squeeze, that's what I'm asking. Is this worth it? And I hope so, and I'll stay for your remarks to see, because I do want to know your perspective.
No, you don't.
I am not, you know, in the business of wanting to either shut down speech, because I do know that if they come for this group today, they will come for the group that I am part of tomorrow. I do believe that.
No, you don't, because it won't happen. because you are free to take any shots at the other side, those you with whom you disagree, without any repercussions or accountability. Is the juice worth the squeeze for him to give his opinions? Meaning, is it worth hurting these poor law students' feelings? They're all in this together. They want to be advocates, but they don't want to fight for the right to party, meaning they don't want to have to stand and deliver. They're going to be, assumedly, Stanford law students will graduate with law degrees and then take the bar and pass and become lawyers and practice law in a courtroom in front of a judge like Kyle Duncan. And they can't even be bothered to have to make an argument on their own behalf. They have to silence and quash anyone who disagrees with them. How's that going to work out in a courtroom? How is that going to succeed or prevail? You know, one exercise they used to do, and this is going far before any kind of law school, but I assume they would do it in law schools too, is you would have a stance, right? You're personally a solid stance on an issue. You believe it. You passionately want to argue it. But a good law professor will say, okay, now I want you to argue the other side. You're pro-choice. That's great. I want you to make an argument as if you were in court advocating the side of the pro-life position and win that argument. That's how you learn. That's how you learn. You put yourself in the shoes of your opponent using empathy, which they have none of. They demand it from others. They don't exhibit it themselves at all. These are pathological narcissists who have been enabled. It's not these kids' fault. They were raised this way. They were taught this way. They were indoctrinated this way in their entire scholastic experience from kindergarten through 12, through undergrad, and wherever else they went to school, and by their parents, and by their social circles. You're always right, honey. You're never wrong. Don't let anybody tell you you can't be something, do something, think something. You're never wrong. This is what these students have been taught, and this is what is being reinforced at this Stanford Law School. Have a couple other comments. I know we got to take a break, so let's do that right here. Ryan Schuling filling in. This is Uncommon Sense on 630 KO.
Why people feel like the harm is so great that we might need to reconsider those policies. And luckily they're in a school where they can learn the advocacy skills to advocate for those changes. I hope that you have something to share with us that we can learn from. I hope you can learn too while you're in this learning institution. I hope you can look to the spectacle of and the noise to the people holding these signs. The people who are here to learn, the people who just like you absolutely are fighting for, working for freedom, just to be free, to be themselves. That is what they are here for. They are here because they feel harmed, not just by your speech. If it was just words, that would be one thing. You have authority and you have power to make decisions that impact the lives of millions.
Associate Dean of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion, Tyrion Steinbach at Stanford Law there with her most dangerous comments of all, is that she hopes that these students one day might be able to advocate for the removal of free speech on campus, that speech which she determines causes quote-unquote harm. What is harm? Again, that is such a vague, nebulous, gray area and definition. Harm, I mean, I could stub my toe or hit my knee on the desk here at the studio position that I'm seating. That would be harm. I've caused the harm to myself if somebody else did it that was accidental. But harm is nowhere in the Constitution. It's nowhere in the First Amendment. You can't threaten somebody. You can't punish them physically. You can't even punish them by exclusion on a college campus, nor should you be able to based on a person's beliefs. But that's what she wants. That's what the hard left, what these students want, is to silence dissent. Think about what I just said and how those words sound and where they come from. We must silence dissent. We must quash them. We must cancel them. We must censor them. That's what we're hearing from the so-called liberal left these days. Now, the president and the law school dean both apologized to Judge Kyle Duncan for this disruption to his speech in a letter that was published in the student newspaper. But I don't know that that goes far enough, and neither does the Stanford Review, which is Stanford's independent newspaper, and they say the following. Stanford's apology to Duncan stated the obvious. This shouldn't have happened. Judge Duncan graciously accepted the apology. However, it is unclear what Stanford plans to do to prevent such disruption in the future. Firing Dean Steinbach is a good start, and I would agree. Not just firing her, eliminating that position altogether, because it only serves to serve up more of this. I've got criticisms of Donald Trump as he takes on Ron DeSantis when we come back on Uncommon Sense.